Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Jeff Zwierink on reasons we might live in a multiverse.
In some sense, the Bible is even describing God creating stuff beyond what we can see, and even physical stuff beyond what we can see, and he's going to invite us into that. So I'm not going to say the Bible talks about a multiverse, but it certainly talks about what God has created in terms that are not inconsistent with the multiverse. And so it just kind of struck me, okay, if we live in a multiverse, I need to be more humble about what we know, but there's nothing in there that says, oh, God isn't the creator of all this.
Jeff Zwierink, next. Do other worlds exist beyond the observable universe? If we do live in a multiverse, what are the implications for the Christian faith? Up next, Spencer Dahlke talks with Jeff Zwierink of Reasons to Believe about these and other related questions. Jeff is the author of the booklet, Who's Afraid of the Multiverse? And please be advised, as some of our elementary school teachers told us, you'll want to put on your thinking cap.
I'm given to the understanding that the term multiverse could maybe be a little ambiguous. Would you care to tell us what you understand and how the scientific community understands the multiverse?
Yeah, when I first started thinking about the multiverse, what struck me is how hard it was to define what it was. I mean, you just think universe, multiverse. Okay, uni means one verse, multi means many verses. So what is a unit? Before we can talk about the multiverse, we need to talk about what the universe is. The best definition I've had, or at least a defensible definition, is everything that we can possibly see from Earth. Now, that may sound a little bit Earth-centric or whatever, but it actually provides a well-defined way of delineating what we know, because we live in this universe that is 14 billion years old. We live in a universe that has a speed of light that has a finite and maximum speed. And so there's just this intriguing phenomena that if you want to look at something further back in time, you just look further away. So if I want to look at the moon, it actually takes light 1 second to get from the moon, a little over 1 second to get from the moon here. So I'm seeing the moon as it looked 1 second ago. Or the sun is about 8 to 8.5 minutes. If we get out to the Andromeda galaxy, it takes light 2.5 million years to get to us. We can keep looking out at the Hubble Ultra Deep Field, or even some of the stuff in the James Webb telescope. Or the most distant thing we can see is actually the cosmic microwave background radiation. And that light has been propagating to us for just shy of 14 billion years. And so we could just ask the question, what is the furthest distance where light can propagate to us? And we say, all right, that's the universe, or the technical term is the observable universe. And then once that definition is in place, the multiverse is just anything beyond that. It could be one kind of multiverse is just a whole lot more of the same stuff out there. I think we almost certainly live in that kind of multiverse. Could be if you take the stuff we can see and all the stuff that's kind of like it and say that's kind of a universe, and I'm playing a little loose with the terms there, but if you'll allow me to do that, if that's it, then you can actually envision other realms where the laws of physics might look different and space might have only two dimensions instead of three. That's another kind of multiverse. You get quantum mechanics plays in, and there's another way you can get a multiverse. But the multiverse just then becomes anything beyond what we can see. And there might be different ways we could envision the multiverse depending on what sort of physics or mathematics we're talking about.
To put it simply, it sounds like there's just a lot we don't know about the multiverse. And so it could mean multiple different things, I suppose. Is that about an accurate way to think about it?
Very is. And one of the terminologies that I like is a fellow named Max Tegmark. I think he's at MIT now. He came up with this way of describing it where we talk about the observable universe is all that we can see. Then a level one multiverse would be that just more of the same stuff out there. So we're never going to see it. But the question is there any reason to think it might be there? And I think there are good scientific reasons to think it'll be there, even though we can never see it. Then there's what's called a level two multiverse. And that's where if all of the stuff that is kind of like what we can see is inside a bubble, there may be other bubbles out there. That would be a level two multiverse. And then there's a level three multiverse. Some interpretations of quantum mechanics say every time a quantum event happens, this reality split off. And so you end up getting this whole realm of stuff that exists we can't see. So that's a level three multiverse. And then a level four is basically anything else that you could envision. And so why I like that terminology is that it now allows you to ask and say, what's the scientific evidence for this level of multiverse? What implications does it have? And so it allows, instead of just saying, okay, the multiverse, and every time you have to be very careful, you say, all right, we're going to talk about a level one multiverse, and here's the scientific evidence and what its implications might be. With that little bit of terminology, we can now be a little bit more specific in how does that impact Christianity? How does that impact science? And so I kind of like that level one, level two, level three, level four delineation.
Going back a little bit to like the evidence, you touched on a little bit of some of the evidence, but you mentioned there is good reason to believe there are things beyond our observable universe. Would you care to tell us what those reasons might be? And do you think the universe has a limit?
I'll go with the first question there. What are the scientific reasons why we might think there is stuff beyond what we can see? And I think that's it shows how much things have changed, that if you'd gone back 30, 40 years ago, when I was just first getting into physics, the universe was all that we could see. That's all that there was. Now we're talking about stuff beyond the universe. That would be, it's not quite the right way to say it, but that would have been considered beyond natural, or, you know, there's the natural world that we can see, and then there's the beyond, which is the supernatural. There's this weird thing that what we're talking about, stuff beyond our universe, and considering it actually existing and not being too worked up about that. That's a big change since since 30, 40 years ago when I got into science. But if you ask most any cosmologist, what's the best description of our universe? They're going to talk about Big Bang cosmology. And that's this idea that we live in a universe that is expanding from this hot, dense state, that it's cooling down over time. As it cools down, it emits the cosmic microwave background radiation. It's very smooth. There's ripples in it. These ripples allow matter to clump together, and you get galaxies and planets. And, you know, 14 billion years later, here we are looking at it and saying, wow, this is such a fascinating universe. Now, there are a few properties of our universe that are really hard to understand. One is that it's the same temperature everywhere we look. And that's really hard because, like I said, the most distant reach I can see, light's been traveling to us for 14 billion years. I look that way, light's been traveling to us for 14 billion years. Those two regions in the opposite direction have never had time to come to the same temperature and communicate to come to the same temperature. And so the fact that the whole universe is at the same temperature, that and a couple of other factors led scientists to come up with this idea that there was this epoch of inflation where our universe was much smaller and it expanded very rapidly. The net effect of that, or one of the interesting feature of that, is that it takes this region that is much smaller, where within that region, things do have time to communicate and come to the same temperature, but then it blows that region up much larger than what can be seen. Now, notice the implications of that, that it explains why our universe is so uniform, but it does so, this epoch of inflation means that there's far more to the universe than what we can see. To the extent we can make measurements and say, yes, there was this epoch of inflation, and you don't get to say, well, it explains this, therefore it's evidence for it. Scientists have to go out and say, is there evidence for inflation? And there's independent evidence that this epoch of inflation happened. If inflation happened, then our universe is far larger than what we can see. You also ask the question, is there any limit to it? We don't know, because all we can measure is what's in here, and what we measure inside doesn't allow us to place any constraints on what the maximum size might be. It might be that it's infinite. Now, every time I say that, and rightfully so, I get into heated discussions with philosophers who argue about whether actual infinities can exist. And I think that's a fascinating discussion. But the truth is, we do not know how large the stuff beyond what we can see actually is, and we may never know.
That seems like the perhaps more reasonable way to understand the multiverse, level one, like you described, you know, just things beyond what we can observe. But I would be remiss not to ask the more interesting question, I think. is there good scientific evidence to believe that there are possible multiple, what you called like bubbles of universe outside of our universe bubble?
It's certainly reasonable. Now, whether it's established, I'm not going to make this claim of that. But the big scientific reason why I think it's reasonable to think that this level two multiverse might exist is, again, it's related to inflation. Cosmologists, when they came up with it, said, oh, if there's this epoch of inflation, it solves what the magnetic monopole problem, which I haven't even addressed. That's why it was originally thought about. But then it also solves why is our universe the same temperature? Why is it so flat? That was like, okay, cool, work on that. And then they thought, okay, so if we want to claim there's this inflationary epoch, then the next question was, okay, so how does inflation happen? What physics would drive inflation to happen? The basic idea is that there's this space that just inflates. And as it inflates, it's at a higher energy state. It will, in various places, decay to a ground state. And in the process of doing that, you get a universe inside that. So our universe is going to be within one of those bubbles. But the very mechanism that drives all this produces a whole bunch of other bubbles. It's kind of like saying, okay, so you got this stuff that inflates and it decays and you get a bubble. And our universe is within that bubble. Is there any reason to think we're the only bubble? You go watch a pot, you don't just get one bubble, you get a lots because the mechanism that produces one bubble produces lots. Well, almost every mechanism we can think of that drives inflation produces lots of bubbles. If we live in an inflationary universe, we live in a level one multiverse. If our understanding of inflation is at all correct in the mechanisms, then we live in a level two multiverse. If I were a betting man, I would bet we probably live in a level two multiverse. But it hasn't been shown one way or the other yet.
It's quite interesting. I will, admit, it was interesting you used the example of the pot because I was trying to, your brain is much more advanced than mine is in this particular way, trying to think about like what inflation is and how it actually operates. Is it kind of like a boiling pot where like space sort of expands like bubbles in the pockets of space? Is that what inflation is? Is a good way to understand it?
Now that you ask, that's a great question, and I've never thought of a good mechanism to describe it. And this is not going to quite be right, but it'll be similar. So you can imagine, maybe just take a sheet of rubber and stretch it out. You know, and as you stretch it, this sheet of rubber has this property that the more you stretch it, the more it wants to stretch. But occasionally it will break. And so you'll get a little hole in it. And that little hole is going to be one of those bubbles. That's not a great picture, but it's kind of more akin. So as it stretches out, if there's a mechanism that causes one hole, there's probably going to be lots of holes in that sheet of rubber as well. Off the top of my head, that's kind of one of the closest things I can think of.
It's a place to start, I suppose. Okay. Yeah. You subscribe to an old Earth creation account for the universe. How would, you know, subscribing to a young Earth creation theory affect our understanding for the multiverse, if at all?
I try to at least be familiar with the most prominent young Earth creationist organizations and what they're arguing and how they reason about things. And it just as a general rule, I find the three or four most prominent young Earth creationist organizations tend to be very skeptical of Big Bang cosmology, that that's not the right way to look at it, that they're just getting the time scales wrong. And so if you're getting the time scales wrong and how old, then the idea that the universe is expanding, that the data for that isn't that compelling either in a young Earth interpretation. And so in some sense, the young Earth position doesn't have to really grapple too much with the multiverse because the impetus for considering it flows out of saying Big Bang cosmology describes our universe very well, but there are these features that are just unexpected, and the only way to get them is to insert them if Big Bang cosmology is a final answer. If inflation is correct, it actually addresses or it explains a number of those problems in a very reasonable way. And so without putting words into a young Earth creationist organization's mouth, I think they would basically say, you guys can play that game. We don't have to worry about that because we know God created the universe 6 to 10,000 years ago, and he did it in a way that suits his purposes, and it looks the way it does because that suits his purposes. And that's kind of where they're going to end up, at least the best I understand the way they argue about Big Bang cosmology.
Well, my guest today is Jeff Swearing. He's an astrophysicist and a senior research scholar at Reasons to Believe. We've been discussing the multiverse. I should ask this one up too, just to round out our discussion for like the evidence for the multiverse. What do you think are the primary scientific, philosophical criticisms of multiverse theories, and how would you address them?
I think the scientific challenges to saying a multiverse does or does not exist is what you're having to do is, based on measurements we can make in this region, extrapolate to what is going on out here. Now, there's reasons why that's a good idea and reasons why you need to be careful of that. So, example of why it's a good idea is there's a similar scenario where when Einstein proposed his theory of general relativity, what they recognized is that gravity could actually cause these closed regions where the space-time becomes so curved that not even light can escape. We now call them black holes as the terminology we put on them. The thing is you can't ever observe a black hole. We test our theory. We say, hey, general relativity is a good description of our universe. And if these black holes exist, or if general relativity is correct and if black holes exist, there ought to be measurable consequences in what we can see. And so we can look at places or regions of space and say, we see evidence for mass here, but we don't see any mass. And we know the mass has got to be this concentrated. And so we can actually find observational evidence that says a black hole exists, even though we can't see the black hole. There's a largely parallel reasoning going on with the multiverse and inflation. If inflation works, this is the way inflation happens. Even though we can't see it, we can ask the question, is there evidence for inflation in what we can see? And even though we can't see beyond, we can take that our theory actually explains what's going on out there. So I think that's the good reason to look at it. Obviously, the challenge to that is we have no idea whether it's actually out there because we can never actually measure it. And if you want to say something scientific, there really does need to be that testability. How do you say whether it's out there? And I think George Ellis, who's a prominent cosmologist, has rightly identified that one problem with using the multiverse to make explanations is that what you put into it is what you get out. So if you want the multiverse to explain why all the laws of physics look so fine-tuned, you have to put into the multiverse this variability that allows our fine-tuning to fall out of it. And there's no way to test that because you can't go out and see what does the multiverse actually look like out there. So the position I would take is that I think there's good evidence to think that a multiverse exists, but I don't know of a good way to use the existence of a multiverse to make good scientific explanations. I don't want to use the term mystery there, but it's like we can know that it exists, but we can't know a lot about it except by what we can measure within our universe. And that's a very limited amount of what's there.
Well, there's a lot more to that discussion, I'm sure. But I guess Turning our attention to how this impacts our faith, one good question to start off is, you know, assuming that a multiverse exists, how's that challenged you? And how has that, shall we say, expanded your understanding of God's creative work?
I remember I was getting ready to give a talk to the organization where I work, Reasons to Believe. And I had been taught that the multiverse really wasn't that important. Not that it wasn't that important, but it's kind of this speculative idea out there. It can be recast in terms of a universe. And so I'm getting ready and I start reading various literature, trying to make sure that I can understand and argue that well. And I remember reading this one and I'm like, this level one multiverse, it's not a controversial idea. I would be hard pressed to argue against it. And so that, you know, there's the immediate of, okay, so I'm supposed to give this talk tomorrow. What do I do with that? But then there's this bigger question, which is the question you ask. Okay, so if a multiverse is there, what if we find that a multiverse exists as a Christian? Would that be a problem for my Christian faith or not? What I recognize is two things, that there are a couple of basic arguments that science informs that the multiverse impacts are arguments for Christianity. So you got the cosmological argument and the teleological argument. And both of those, science can kind of weigh in and say, is there a beginning? That would strengthen the cosmological argument or provide support for the cosmological argument. Is there fine tuning and design? That would provide strength for the teleological argument. And so there's a practical question of how does the multiverse impact those? But then there's just a bigger question of, if we live in a multiverse, does that mean the Bible is incorrect? And so I started asking, okay, so what would go on with that? And my initial thought was, oh, that would be bad. Then I started thinking about what I knew of Scripture and reading Scripture and seeing what it had to say. And what I've recognized is that at a very minimal level, all God needs for humans to exist, basically the earth. You could argue maybe the earth and the sun, and that's all that really needed to be here. But he made something far bigger than that. And so we live in a universe with 100 billion trillion stars. And I don't think that's wasteful or any sort of thing like that. God chose to do that. So even if just our universe exists, there's a lot more stars out there than need to be. If he created other universes, why would that bother me? So that was one thought that occurred to me. And then the other thought that occurred to me is like, well, even as I read Scripture, there are other realms that God has told, or that Scripture tells us that God created. He created the angelic realm. Now, that's not a physical realm, but it's a spiritual realm. So he created our physical realm, the angelic realm. But even in that, there's the new heaven and new earth, where there's, you just look at the description in Revelation, there's new physics going on there. So in some sense, the Bible is even describing God creating stuff beyond what we can see, and even physical stuff beyond what we can see. And he's going to invite us into that. So I'm not going to say the Bible talks about a multiverse, but it certainly talks about what God has created in terms that are not inconsistent with the multiverse. And so it just kind of struck me, okay, if we live in a multiverse, I need to be more humble about what we know, but there's nothing in there that says, oh, God isn't the creator of all this.
Leaning into this question, maybe drawing more on a cultural understanding of what the level two multiverse might look like, you know, the Rick and Morty, all possibilities of what could possibly happen along the space-time continuum. Mm-hmm. They are real somewhere in the multiverse, you know. One could make that possible challenge that if there is a multiverse, possibly might that imply multiple versions of Earth, multiple versions mm-hmm. of humanity, more mm-hmm. importantly, multiple salvific events. And what would that mean about the exclusivity of Christ's role as our Redeemer?
I think that gets right to the essence of the question we want to ask there, because there is a philosophical assumption that has been smuggled in there that everything is purely physical. If human life is entirely physical, then rearrange all the atoms. I am just, at the end of the day, an assemblage of atoms moving a certain way. And so if the multiverse has every possible assemblage of atoms, not only do I happen here, anytime that assemblage of atoms arises, then you've got Jeff Zwerink again. This is one of those philosophical challenges you have to deal with that I actually would argue, when you're talking about the multiverse, it actually fits far more comfortably with what we think and believe as scientists and people in general with a theistic Christian worldview than it does with a naturalistic worldview. And it's just for this reason you brought up, is that if everything is just purely material, then you're faced with this, if the multiverse is big enough, everything just happens. Not only does it happen once, it happens multiple times. In fact, depending on how large the multiverse is, it may have happened an infinite number of times. One implication is this whole idea of we're actually doing science and discovering how the world works, that goes out the window. Because there's nothing in there where we're sitting in here and remember, everything is purely physical. I'm interacting with other physical stuff. And I'm drawing conclusions in my mind that I think are actual creative thoughts where I'm coming up with new ideas. But reality, those are just assemblages of atoms somewhere up there. But that's happened throughout the multiverse. There's even a more fundamental problem. So one of the key features of science that I don't know that people truly appreciate is that science isn't about finding the answer that explains things. The way it does is that it goes out and says, all right, here's this set of phenomena. What are various ways I could explain this? And then they go about testing things to figure out which is the most likely explanation of what happened. What's been this cool feature of the universe in which we live is that usually the simplest explanation that explains all the data is the correct one. Now, the multiverse comes in, how does that impact science? And I'll give a dumb story that happened when I was a freshman in college. Had to take a physics class where there was a lab associated with it. And anybody, when you take a lab, you know, highly contrived situations to get students used to experimenting. But then one of the things you always have to do is ask, well, what are the sources of error in there? The particular lab we were doing was you can have these air tracks where carts move along them and you can bounce them and do conservation momentum and conservation of energy or measurements on there. And the carts, as they'll move along, can emit sparks on a piece of paper. And you can now measure, you know, how frequently the sparks are. You can measure how far apart the dots are and you can get velocities. One of the measurements we had was, you know, everything was going along nice, dot, 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 dot. And then one was just way down over here and then dot, 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 dot. If I look at that little region, I'm just going to get what appear to be wrong answers because looks like there could be some wrong data there. And so what's the source of error on that? Well, most likely there was an air current movement that caused the spark to jump into the wrong gap. That's most likely what would happen. But my lab partner goes, oh, maybe that was a passing black hole. Exactly. Your little laugh is exactly the right response, because that's ludicrous, right? Yeah. Now, in a multiverse, how do I know that explanation is wrong? There's no way to know, because that's a legitimate explanation for what would be there. The only reason I throw it out is because this is far more likely to happen. If we're going to use the multiverse to explain the incredible rarity of life here on Earth and the development of humans and all the stuff we can say, it's like, yeah, it's all really weird, but it happens because the multiverse is big enough that everything happens. I no longer get to throw out all these weird explanations, because another weird explanation of why we're here is that there's a thermal fluctuation in the vacuum of space. And in that thermal fluctuation, all the atoms for Jeff Zwering's brain comes into existence. And I'm the only one that exists, and everything else is just a figment of my imagination. That is a perfectly legitimate explanation in the context of a multiverse. And I have no reason to throw it out, except something into me says, no, that's just not the right way to look at it. But I have no physical reason to throw it out. So if the multiverse exists, and we want to do science, you need something like Christian theism to come in and say, wait a second, we're not just physical beings. We can trust the thoughts of our minds. Our intuition about what's right or wrong, though we need to check them and they can be wrong, are good ways to operate. And we're not just purely physical. So rearrange everything and you're not going to get Jeff Zwering for some reason out there, because Jeff Zwering is not just physical. He's a union of physical and spiritual, like we see described in Scripture.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Jeff Zwering, senior scholar with Reasons to Believe. Go to reasons.org. Jeff is author of the booklet, Who's Afraid of the Multiverse? Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Brad Edwards on the significance of actually going to church for a culture of individualism and anxiety.
The God and creator of this universe is shining his loving gaze upon every single Sunday morning. Like, if you long for significance, meaning, and purpose, come to church with me. And if not, that's okay. Still keep coming over for dinner.
That's tomorrow at this same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.